You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
New York Giants fans, and welcome to your Valentine's Views podcast for Friday, April 8th. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And with the NFL draft closing in less than 3 weeks away, we have been giving you a lot of draft coverage at BigBlueView.com and here on the podcast. This week, I had a chance to talk with Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan and also Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I hope that you have had an opportunity to listen to either or both of those episodes. If not, you can find them on Big Blue View Radio, on all of your favorite podcast applications, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also listen to the shows done by Nick Filato and Chris Flum on Big Blue View Radio, as they break down various positions, various players, various aspects of the upcoming 2022 NFL draft. Hope that you'll follow along on those episodes and on all of our coverage at Big Blue View as we get you ready for the 2022 NFL draft and whatever your New York Giants are going to do when it is their turn at number 5 and number 7 in the first round of the draft. But today I want to do something a little bit different. Had an opportunity to speak with former New York Giant, former New England Patriot, former rugby Olympian Nate Ebner earlier this week. Ebner has written a fantastic book titled Finish Strong that details his relationship with his father, who was tragically murdered when Nate was only 19 years old. Details Nate's path as a rugby star and then as a walk-on on the football team at Ohio State, a path that eventually led him to the NFL. This book is a very personal book for Ebner. As I said, deals a lot with his relationship to his father and how he has spent the years since his father's murder trying to honor his father by living a life, as he would say, living a life that his father would be proud of. So let's, without any further ado, without any further blabbering from me, let's get right to the interview that I did with Nate Ebner. All right, Giants fans, I'm joined now by former Giant and New England Patriot, Nate Ebner, and Nate's here to talk about his recently published book, Finish Strong. Nate, thank you very, very much for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so as I think I told you off air, I have not yet fully read the book. I've skimmed through the book a little bit. This for you is a really personal, really intense book to have written, I would think. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I've been fortunate to have a pretty unique sports story, and I think that's what pulls the people in is, the insight to a very unique sports story. And that, not being a high school football player to walking on to a school like Ohio State, getting drafted and playing as long as I've played and the Super Bowls and stuff. And, I was a rugby player before that. So I took a kind of a leave of absence in the middle of my NFL career to go to the Olympics. Just that story has been pretty cool. I was fortunate enough to stay healthy and be blessed enough to have the ability to do those things. But The core to that story is the relationship and bond that I had with my father, who, you know, was basically the driving force in everything in my life. And it's a very personal story. And I think really anyone can relate to, whether you're a parent yourself or you have some type of father, son, mother, daughter, or vice versa relationship. There's obviously major tragedy in my story that, you know, people can maybe relate to. And ultimately, it's for me, a real motivational story in the sense that, you know, I talk about how I, you know, didn't let the tragedy in my life of losing my father, especially the way that I lost him, to kind of derail the rest of my life, and making conscious decisions to make the most out of my life and live, you know, to be the type of man and person that my dad raised me to be, and really honor him. So it's a pretty motivational story, but again, I think it's one that everyone can relate to. And the core to the story is a human aspect that I think we all can kind of relate to, but the sports story is the vessel for sure. And a unique one at that.
Right. And your purpose for writing this book is not really, you know, from what I can gather, it's not, you know, self-serving to tell this wonderful story about Nate Ebner. This feels more like although it's personal for you and probably hard to relive sometimes, you know, in certain aspects of it, this book is motivational for people, I would think. And I think that's probably a big part of the reason why you went ahead and wrote it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. At the end of the day, I don't see myself as like super special or anything. You know, I was just a kind of a blue collar kid that grew up in a junkyard and learned the right values and had a lot of grit about me and was willing to work hard. And, you know, I think that's something we can all relate to. Mm-hmm. And I got to be a part of some amazing things and fortunately achieved some cool things. But it all came back to the way I was raised and the relationship that I had. And really, you know, I'm just a true believer you can achieve anything if you're willing to sacrifice everything. And you know, that's kind of what my story was about. And like you had mentioned, it's motivational in the sense of being an underdog in a way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many times along the way, people, you know, kind of telling you how they think it should go, even though they have no influence on what you do daily. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I'll go back to the tragedy that I went through and using that to, you know, take a positive mindset around something so major in my life. You know, that was a huge piece for me, a huge motivational piece, but, you know, it was everything for me to turn something so big and tragic into a positive. And ultimately, I think a lot of people who go through stuff like that can relate because it's the type of thing that makes you want to quit at life and maybe not move forward, kind of feel sorry for yourself. And those types of thoughts really, you know, don't take you anywhere. And I think my mom was a huge part in that. And if you read in the book, you know, that was probably the biggest turning point in my life. Was not just losing my father, the way that I lost my father, the relationship that I had with him, but the way my mom stepped up as a woman who, you know, was divorced from him. So she was just me and her. And basically she said what she needed to say and what I needed to hear. As hard as that probably was for her, you know, I had friends and other people who had gone through similar experiences and people coddled them. And, you know, tell them everything's going to be all right and tell them what they want to hear. And, you know, my mom had, you know, the strength to really tell me what I needed to hear, which was you need to get on with it and you need to live a life your dad would be proud of. And, you know, I talk about that being really the biggest part in my story because, you know, without her, I was starting to go down a bad path. And, you know, I always will wonder, had she not had that conversation with me, if I would have let the dark side of it all take over me. And, you know, she, if you will, she brought me to the light, and that was a huge point in my story. And again, you know, we haven't even really talked about the sports. It's
right.
Great vessel, but it's a human story for sure.
Right. And we'll get to that. I just so that people know, your father was killed in the junkyard in 2008 by a thief. And I'm actually glad you got into the whole living a life he'd be proud of thing, because I was actually going to ask you about, I and skimming through the book, I love that line. I love that. I love that attitude. But let's actually talk about the sports a little bit.
Yeah.
You played peewee football.
Yeah.
And before walking on, you walked on, what is a sophomore at Ohio State, I believe, or is it junior?
Well, it was the winter of my sophomore year. So the football season had already taken place. So my first season with Ohio State was technically my junior year of college.
And the last time you had played football prior to that, you were how old?
Probably like 12, I would say, somewhere in there. Just, you know, age grade stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you know, you had obviously, people who know your story know that you were a star rugby player, tremendous rugby player, you know, could have, and eventually did play, you know, at the highest levels, you know, of the sport. But how long had that been gnawing at you? This, you know, I can play rugby and I'm really good at it, but I want to play in the NFL. How long had that kind of been in the back of your head?
You know, I don't think I would say it went down quite like that. I would say I was one of the best rugby players in the country at a very young age, especially in the age grade stuff. So rugby dominated my life. I mean, from probably 13 on, I was all rugby all the time. And I mean, I made the junior national team at 16. So at 16 years old, I was going to junior World Cups, playing against some of the best kids in the world. And, you know, I remember we played South Africa. 20 of their 26 man roster were under professional contract, these young kids. So, I mean, I was playing high level rugby. I didn't really care about football. I was all rugby all the time. But then when you look at my whole story and the perfect storm that kind of took place, it was like, well, my senior year, I almost played football because my friends almost talked me into it, but I had a junior World Cup. I chose not to. Mm-hmm. And then my high school went on to win the Division I state championship in football at Ohio, in Ohio, which is, you know, a big one. And so I missed that one. That was bittersweet, but obviously, you know, they didn't need me. And then I go to Ohio State. And I'm, you know, still in these junior World Cups freshman year. And then I think my last one was my freshman year of college. And then I was too old. So it was like, okay, now you still got 3 more years at least of college. And you want to play rugby professionally, but I didn't want to go overseas. That was always a big thing. There was no pro league in the United States. And you know, I didn't want to learn French or whatever, Italian, and have to live in a different country and all that. And that always rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, so I'm kind of stuck in this limbo. I'm still in college, but I can't go play pro. And I don't want to go overseas. And, you know, I'm kind of stuck playing club rugby at Ohio State. And, you know, it was, you know, unfortunately, like I just took it so seriously, especially after playing internationally in 3 junior World Cups. Like I wanted to win, you know, and it was kind of me versus everybody else on the other team. And then it was, you know, they put more effort into the after party than the game sometimes. And I just like that whole environment, as much as it's a really cool aspect of rugby in America, I love it. It's such a social thing. But as someone who wants to be a high performance athlete, that just, it wasn't doing it for me. So it was
right. You still wanted the competition. You wanted the win or lose. You wanted
right.
The,
I mean, I just got done playing part of it. I just got done playing the, you know, South Africa's best, one of the best teams in the world. And, you know, here I am playing Ohio State versus Indiana, and I can't even, you know, pass the ball to my teammates. It was frustrating. Let's just call it that. It was frustrating. And so you got the high school, you got the can't go pro. I'm still in college. You got me playing club sport. And I just, football was always there. You're at Ohio State, man. It's like, you can't escape football at Ohio State. It's Ohio State, right? And, you know, I just had this, everybody's like, oh, the football players, they're so special, blah, blah, blah. And I just, it got to a point where I was like, you know what, I'm gonna walk onto the football team. And I talked to my dad about it. And this is a major part of my story because, you know, here it is. My dad introduced me to rugby. He watched me play all over the world. It was something that we genuinely shared as a bond. You know, we did everything together, but rugby was this thing that he gave me and I found my own passion for, and we shared it together. It was like a beautiful thing. And here I was about to tell him, look, man, I love you and rugby's awesome and all that, but like, I think I want to go play football and I'm going to try to walk on at Ohio State. And I wanted like his blessing in that, right? And as soon as I told him, he was all in. He was, you know, let's put rugby on the back burner, all in on football. Let's see if you can do something special, maybe have some success and maybe go to the NFL. And if it doesn't work out, rugby will always be there for you, you know? And he was just very supportive. But from that conversation on, it was always, you know, let's see if you can make it. And let's, you know, I told him I wanted to go to the NFL. So I kind of kept that to myself. But that was the last time I saw him. That was the last time we spoke, because that night he drove home. You know, he came to Columbus to see me and we had dinner, and he drove home. And the next day was when he was murdered at the junkyard. And that was really the last conversation we had had. And for me, you know, it became a promise I needed to keep. And you know, the, you know, as I allude to in the book, once I started to walk on at the football team at Ohio State, that brotherhood and the focus that I put into it, it was almost therapy for me, because it would take me out of my own mental space. I had to be so present in trying to be successful at something I didn't know anything about with the football and trying to outperform these other athletes, that it required all of me to be there. And that was almost therapeutic in the sense of when I would leave the football facility, all I would do is think about, you know, my dad. And I was in a bad headspace for quite some time. So football was huge, not only obviously for what it gave me in my life, but just in that time in my life, I needed something big like that more than ever. And that was I can't say how important it was for me to have that every day to fight for and work for.
And obviously you were, you know, a world-class athlete, and you had played a really physical sport, which at least in physicality, you know, it resembles, you know, American football a little bit, but did you really have any idea what you were walking on to, or what you were getting yourself into when you walked onto that team?
No. I mean, simple answer was no. I just knew what I wanted to do. And I will say football is probably a more physical sport. It's just the speed creates serious collisions that, and the nature of the game is like 11 people tackling one person, where rugby, you can't do that. So it's, rugby's like a safer game, and it's just a little toned back, just a titch, which again makes the impacts less. That's a different conversation. But essentially, yeah, I didn't know what I was walking into, but I didn't care. And I say in my book that I'd say that experience was probably the most humbling experience one of the most humbling experiences I've had in my life to this day, because athletically, I was gifted, as you kind of mentioned. I played with some of the best rugby players in the world. I knew I could run and I was strong and all that. But I mean, football, there's an IQ to football. There is an absolute IQ, like there is to any sport, you know, and playing in peewee football where they hand me the ball and I run around everybody is a lot different than, you know, playing cover two or man-to-man defense or, you know, all those different things that go into the chess game that is football. And wow, that was humbling. Because I had to learn. It had nothing to do with my physical ability. Physically, I could do whatever anyone else could do. I had to get the balance and, you know, the footwork down and the movements of football, but that came fairly quickly to me. But the understanding of where to be and why you need to be there, and you know, the body control to have because of the certain situations. I mean, there's an absolute IQ I could talk about all day. And with that, that's where I found special teams, because I was, as we spoke about, in my third year already walking on, and I have this time to learn football. I didn't play in high school. I didn't have years to spend on red shirts and stuff, you know? And so I gravitated towards special teams. I knew I needed to get on the field. So I was just like, you know, line me up on kickoff and let me just go tackle the guy with the ball for the most part. Like, yeah, I can do that, you know? And that's why special teams was such a big thing for me. And I took it very seriously because it's what got me on the bus. It's what got me on the roster. I was playing in every game. You know, I played in every single game at Ohio State from the first year I walked on. You know, started out just being on the kickoff team to kickoff and kickoff return. And then, you know, by the second year I was in all four phases. And then the third year, yeah, I probably should have started on defense, but that's another story. Then I was like really good at the special team stuff. And essentially that's what got me to play in the NFL. You know, I think when I walked into this journey, I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it as, you know, you're going to be a special teams player and that's how you're going to get into the NFL and you're going to get drafted specifically for that. I mean, I never would have thought that. I thought, you know, I'll just outplay the best safety or whatever. But, you know, life, the goal was to get to the league. And I realized quickly within that I needed to get on the field, and that was special teams. And I had to, you know, midline adjust in the middle of it. And that's the course that it took. And I'm thankful for that, because without that, I don't know that I would have had the time to really be where I needed to be in a position defensively or even offensively. But I was a defensive player, you know, to get drafted or to make it on an NFL squad my first year. You know, the special teams allowed me to make it on an NFL roster. And then my rookie season with the New England Patriots, where I really learned football, then I could implement my defensive structure and my ability to play safety in different positions. And that's what made me have a long career, is because I was always someone that could go in at any time and play multiple positions because I knew everything. But the special teams is what got me to the league, and what, you know, technically I was getting paid for on Sundays.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Just tell me, you know, you wanted the NFL, you wanted that as a dream. That was the goal when you walked on at Ohio State. And yet, you know, like you said, you're primarily a special teams player, and those guys don't get drafted. Generally, those guys don't get drafted. You get drafted in the sixth round by the Patriots. Just, you know, if you think back on it, what is that like for you? What is that moment like for you that, hey, you know, this is reality. This is what I wanted. And now it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about that a lot in the book, Draft Day. You know, I never thought I was going to get drafted. This whole journey was just like, give me the opportunity to just get on a roster, to be on a practice squad, to just get my foot in the door and earn it. Not that I didn't, you know, in New England, you got to earn it. Bill will cut draft picks left and right, like it's his job. So he doesn't really care. So you always got to earn it there. But, you know, essentially I was just sitting at home on the second day. Some family was around, you know, I had some phone calls earlier in that week. I had a really good pro day, which I talk about in the book as well. And after having the pro day that I had, I thought, okay, relative to like, had I been in the combine, I would have had like the best numbers in every single thing, except for maybe my 40 would have been third best. But every other measurable would have been the best in the combine that year. I knew, I was like, somebody's got to give me a chance. I don't have experience, but like, just there's an upside to the potential, right? And then I started to get phone calls. And then the draft day came, and then like my phone really started to ring, and I'm like, you know, I think I might get drafted. You know, it wasn't something I was planning for. And you know, I was on the phone with, I think it was the Arizona Cardinals at the time, or St. Louis Rams. I don't know. And my agent calls me and is like, "Hey, get off the phone. The Patriots are trying to call you. They're, you know, they got a draft pick coming up." And sure enough, Bill's on the phone, Mr. Kraft's on the phone. And the next day I'm on a plane to New England. They picked me in the sixth round. And, you know, it was what a cool experience, but it was very much so like, you know, I already had the fire, but it ignited it even mm-hmm. more to be like, all right, let's go. Like, this is real. Like you haven't made it, but you know, it's in the vision. We can see it now. So let's give everything we have so this works.
And you talked about football IQ and really needing to learn the game and those kinds of things. When you think back on it, could you have landed in a better place than New England to learn what you needed to learn? And could you have had that kind of career, you know, if you had, you know, maybe landed somewhere else?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I'll never be able to answer that and really know the truth. Right. I mean, how could we really know? Because there are some really good coordinators throughout the NFL that would have been beneficial for me, especially from a special team standpoint. And I like to believe, regardless of me being in New England, now they gave me the freedom to be as creative of a player as I grew into over the 8 years I was with them. But I like to believe that early on in my career, it didn't matter what jersey I was in. I was so hungry to have success that I would have made plays being on the worst team in the NFL. I genuinely believe that the way that I, you know, played as a young player. But the way I was developed as a defensive player in New England and the onus that was put on me to know, and the help that I got from Matt Patricia's, who knew they were never going to use me on defense, or that wasn't the plan anyways to begin with. And the help that I got from the coaching staff, because Bill demanded it, I had so much growth. You know, like I mentioned earlier, that was the most understand. That was the year I understood. I became to understand football because of the environment that I was in. And I have no doubt that New England in that time frame with those coaches and Bill and the way we were operating back then, that's why I did have a lot of the success that I had, especially like I keep referring to the defensive side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Scott O'Brien also was this coordinator in New England who was kind of like a father figure of the special teams in the league. And, I had him for 4 years or whatever it was, 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was put in a really good position to succeed. I don't know that there could have been a better place, you know, that to come back to your first thing, but I wouldn't change it, obviously.
Right. And you got to play next to Michael Slater. For how many
Matthew
years?
Slater.
Matthew Slater. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, all good. 8 years.
What's that like? I mean, one of the, you know, maybe a, between the two of you, maybe the best special teams tandem of guys that I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, that was awesome. I mean, Batman and Robin, if you will. Mm-hmm. He was Batman. You know, Matt and I were great. You know, if you talk to Matt, we pushed each other so much. I mean, and I came in as such a hungry young player that, you know, here you got this Pro Bowl special teams player that's kind of taken over. And then I come in and I start, you know, my first year I had like 17 some tackles on special teams, and they were mainly kickoff because Matt was getting them all on punt, and you know, we were getting pretty competitive, and I think I earned his respect right away that first year. But we definitely competed to make the most plays, but through our careers together, not only did we, you know, iron sharpen iron and we made each other better, but as leaders on the team, you know, Matt's always that been a spiritual leader. He's a man who walks in faith. He's one of the best human beings. He's arguably top three best human beings of, you know, just character standpoint of anyone I've ever met in my life. And I'll forever be grateful to have worked alongside him as long as I have. You know, when you talk about a player that's as successful as he is on the field, and I just want to talk about how good of a person he is. That speaks to how good of a person he really is. But anyways, he was, like I said, the spiritual kind of leader and the flag carrier, if you will, the speech giver, and I was always kind of, I think I would say I was like the technician, or I was like the mean guy, I guess, because, you know, Matt was the, you know, fast guy. He's the gunner. He just let it rip. But I had to make sure I was in the mix of it more in terms of like calling the plays on punt and making sure everyone was doing the right things. And I was kind of more of the orchestrator of the whole machine. And, you know, we would work well in that sense that Matt was that captain, you know, speech, you know, inspiring figure. And then when it came to like the technical stuff, like typically it would just, you know, that's where I would typically run the show in a sense. It was like, who's blocking who and what schemes are we running in this situation? And then what is my responsibility in this scheme, and why should I approach it with this type of angle because of what we're actually big picture wise trying to accomplish? Like, that's kind of how I would handle things. But ultimately, I think we made each other better players. We were able to take over the room we had together because we both took it very seriously. And when we got young guys in to follow us, they really wanted to follow us because of the seriousness of which we took our craft. And, you know, obviously the success we had on top of that. So, you know, I could speak all day about how amazing it was to be with Matt for as long as I was. You know, even in the NFL, you're lucky to play with a guy for 1, 2, 3 years. You're lucky to be in the NFL for 4 years, to have played with Matt Slater for 8 years together. You know, yeah, I mean, I was lucky. I mean, I hope he feels the same way.
I'm sure he does. You know, Nate, my my website, Big Blue View, is primarily dedicated to the New York Giants.
Absolutely.
And that leads me after our sort of long-winded discussion so far, that leads me to Joe Judge.
Mm-hmm.
What did Joe Judge mean to your career? What does Joe Judge mean to you? I know that you mean a lot to him. Just I can tell that from conversations with him over the 2 years he was Giants head coach. Just what does he mean to you?
I'm very close with Joe. You know, we kind of came in together. You know, I was a rookie and he was an assistant, first year assistant in the NFL my rookie year. And, you know, we kind of grew together. You know, every season in my NFL career, he was there for every rep of every single thing that I ever did. And I can't say that for anyone else. And that's unique. And, you know, we not only was he there for everything, but we grew together. He allowed me to be me and we challenged each other. You know, we had a lot of long conversations where we would, you know, really dive into the nitty gritty of what we're trying to do from a schematical standpoint. And those conversations, you know, made us both better. He was getting a perspective of someone on the field and I was getting a coach's perspective, and we were able to kind of mesh that for quite a few years and have a lot of success that way. And, you know, not only was he a great coach, but, you know, Joe had a good heart. You know, there's a lot of fraudulent people that find their way in the NFL or find themselves in a position of power or coaching or whatever. And they're just phony. You know, that's like that in everything in life. Right. And Joe was not that, you know, I don't know how people feel about this. You know, he's got to give his speeches to the media, but at the end of the day, dude walked what he said he would do. And, you know, he was special in that regard. And, he was honest with me and, you know, he just, for me, I would also like to add that, you know, I had moments in my career where I was injured and I had to kind of say like, Joe, just trust me. Like I'll be there on Sunday type of deal. And the trust that he gained in me through all those years. And, you know, the conversations, like I said, we had with Scheme and how we should attack stuff. And, you know, it was funny because all the years in New England, you know, Matt is such a nice guy that I would like Joe would, you know, Joe and then Cam, you know, the other assistants at the time, they would say something about a scheme and me and Matt would kind of look at each other like, we absolutely can't do that. And Matt's such a good guy. He'd be like, well, you know, yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, I could see why you, and then I always had to be the bad guy and I'd always have to be like, you can't do this, you know, and we'd have those conversations all the time and just so much growth. Like I said, a lot of success, some bad moments too. And a lot of trust built there. And like I've mentioned, you know, there for every rep of everything I ever did in the league. And he knew my story as well as anyone. And he's just, he's I can't say that about anyone else in my career. So he'll always be special to me in that regard.
Was it different coming to New York and playing for him as a head coach?
I mean, absolutely. The whole thing was different. You know, I think he had his hands tied and it was kind of a little bit out of his control. You know, I can say that honestly, that's my feelings on it. I don't know if anyone cares what I think, but that's just my opinion. Cause I was around for 10 years. I saw some successful teams, like, you know, and I saw what kind of happened there. And I don't know how much of a fair shot he really got to have the success that I think he could have. So, but you know, that's the NFL. Unfortunately, if you don't have success now, the people don't want to wait. You know, and of course it was different. He wasn't sitting there coordinating just the special teams units or working with the wide receivers. He was trying to orchestrate this whole thing and bring this team together. And, you know, you're bringing a team together where you've got new coaches and a new staff of people you don't know, and trying to get people to operate a way that you've operated for the last 8 years in New England, or in a place that, you know, you've had success. So that's how you want to, you know, do it. But you're trying to bring people along that necessarily, you know, they don't see it that way. And you got to build trust in your process and bring these people with you. It takes some time, you know. I just think it was just tough for him from the get go. And I just think he had his hands tied a little bit, and it's unfortunate because I think Joe's a great coach and he's a great motivator, and he definitely brings people together, and he's a hard worker. And, like I said, he'll have success, given the right opportunity.
I appreciate your thoughtfulness in that answer. I really do. Next thing that I've got for you is, what's next for you? The NFL, your playing days are done at this point. What's next for you? Where do you think this journey is going to take you now?
I'd say my body just has had enough. I went to go try to do the Olympics again. I played every game my 2020 season. And I had developed some tendonitis, or what I thought was tendonitis, in my quad tendons, but turned out I ended up, you know, having them torn, and it's just the cartilage in my knees had gotten so bad that I was trying to get, you know, put it in other places. Got to the season, played about half the season this year, and it's just so bad that it's just like, you know, grinding steel on steel. Just, you know, it is what it is. So getting that fixed, that's part one. Is, you know, I've put 10 hard years of NFL, and, you know, like we mentioned earlier, you know, I've been playing at a high level really since I was 16. So 17 years of high level starting and stopping and exploding, you know, I got to get my knees right. And so I'm in that process right now, currently 9 weeks out of a fairly new surgery for cartilage repair. And, you know, once that heals up, I'll have to get the other one done. But, you know, I think I'm going to be much better after that. It's made me already realize how much I've been dealing with. And I'm looking forward to those days of, you know, being able to walk around the golf course and swing a golf club without my knees hurt, lining up my putts without, you know, having to lay on my stomach. But right now it's get that right. It's get back healthy so my quality of life is good. Obviously, I'm deeply rooted in the rugby world. You know, to what extent my physical health comes back, and, you know, what I'll be able to do from a competition standpoint. You know, will I be able to just go for a mile jog, or will I be able to maybe go back to the Olympics and try to play rugby again, or, you know, maybe play at an international level? I can't answer any of those things. You know, right now my focus is to get physically healthy and see what happens. But until then, you know, that's really the focus. And, you know, I've got some things in the works as well. Some interest in this book becoming a film as well. There's some talk about it. So we got some things going on, and obviously I've actually been asked to coach quite a bit. I don't know that I'm ready to go right back into that grind away.
So if they make a film, who does Nate Ebner want to play Nate Ebner?
I don't care. I don't care who the actor is. I want to make sure it does my dad's story justice. It does, you know, him justice. That the whole book is about him. I want someone to read my book or watch that movie and say, you know, whatever happens to me in my life does not define me. It's the way that I respond, and I have control in that. And, you know, I can do anything I want if I'm willing to put everything into it. And, you know, I want parents to watch that and realize, you know, the time we spend with our children is invaluable. Buying them gifts and sending them, you know, having babysitters, that stuff, you know, the reason I am the way I am is because the time my dad put in with me and the relationship we had. And, you know, every kid needs a father and a mother and a parent. And it's important that we spend time with our children. And I think, I don't know, I think there's something for everyone if that does become a film, but ultimately that's what I want people to feel when they read the book as well.
I was actually going to ask you, you know, as a final question, what your overriding message was, and I think you just gave it, so I don't have to ask. Before I let you go, just let people know, you know, where they can find out more about you, where they can find the book, where they can find you on social media or any of that stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on social media on Instagram, Nate Ebner, Ebs43, but same with Twitter. I'm not super active on the social media platforms, but yeah, I mean, you could get my book anywhere. I mean, it was Penguin, Random House, so it's, you know, Barnes and Noble's, Amazon. Just type in Nate Ebner, Finish Strong, and it's you know, a father's what now, I don't even remember, but just Nate Ebner, Finish Strong, and you're good. It'll pop up everywhere you look, and it should be a quick read. I'd love to hear what you think. Feel free to message me on any social media platform and tell me what you think. People do it all the time, and I love to have those conversations and hear, you know, what they liked or didn't and how it impacted them. And, you know, a lot of time went into that, and a lot of honesty was exposed in writing that. So, you know, I'm definitely down to hear what people think.
Nate, I will do that when I finish the book here, and I greatly appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much, and best of luck with getting the knees healthy and whatever else you decide to do next.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Thank you
All
very
right.
much.
Take
Thanks for having
care.
Me.
Giants fans, that's our show for today. Thanks to Nate Ebner for the time. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please remember to subscribe to Big Blue View Radio on all of your favorite podcast applications. Please remember to follow us on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram. Check out our YouTube channel. Join the community at bigblueview.com if you haven't done that already, so that you can comment and discuss Giants-related topics with other Giants fans. Please remember, as I always say, to stay safe out there, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.